Hello, Leo, and welcome to Reckoning for the Faithful, the 2025 spring reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer here with some astrology for you. But before I go there, I want to just start out by getting some grounding in the very difficult state that the world is in right now. As a full participant in Western culture for, you know, the past nearly 61 years, I'm fully aware of the fact that things always seem to be very busy and like they're going faster and faster, and many people have this sensation of being on a treadmill, and sometimes we figure out that the whole thing is a Ponzi scheme, and you know, we've invested our life savings in it and so forth. But nothing has ever happened like is happening now. And I was saying this when we were in plainly deep water, owing to what I call full digital conditions. Which I believe we have been in since the Y2K incident, and then related stuff going out to the election of 2000, and then the 9/11 incident. That trifecta of incidents like heralded the beginning of the absolutely, completely digital world. And the thing that I'm saying over and over again, and I'm not entirely sure I'm getting through, but I have a good reason to think that you actually might understand the problem. You might understand the problem is that the completely overwhelming rise of digital conditions, which has come in a series of stages. So we had all the stuff around 2000, 2001, and then we had the introduction of the iPhone. That was huge. I mean, that put the ball and chain and the tracking device right in everyone's pocket, and like made it super convenient to enslave every human being on the planet, including people who couldn't afford the devices because the government just gives you one if you can't afford it, at least around here anyway. And the theme here is that this is not a technological issue. This is a spiritual crisis that we are in, which is only meaningful for people who have some concept of what spiritual is, other than, you know, taking Holy Communion in the church and being married by a priest or stepping on the glass at the synagogue when you get married. Spiritual is the reality of our state of being and our relationship to spirit and to existence. And what has happened in a series of stages, and we are in one of those stages big time right now, right in this moment of essentially humanity submitting to the machine, and the machine escaping control of its ruler, like Frankenstein's monster or like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know, creating the spell that it couldn't contain again, the genie getting out of the bottle and so forth. This is a spiritual crisis, and a new god has descended upon the planet. Now, I'm not here to say that this is actually some kind of divine creation. What I'm saying is that humans have manufactured a god that exists more than in concept, more than a thing written about in the Bible, more than a thing... you know, and every religion has its own way that that the world was created, and of course they couldn't have started so many different ways. It started the way that it started, but those are all constructions. Those are all concepts, for some perhaps more true than others. But what has actually happened now, as this omnipresent, omniscient, all knowing, all powerful, all viewing, all listening, all tracking, all whatever it might be, knows more about you than you. Except AI thought that Eric Francis and Eric Coppolino were two different people, so I was glad to see that it wasn't as omniscient as I thought it might be. We have been swallowed. Consciousness has been swallowed. The place where we are capable of connecting to some divine sense of who we are has been completely consumed by digital technology. For a long time, and I've been a participant in, at different times in various New Age type of movements, and I studied and practice and teach A Course in Miracles and all that, and I was present for the Harmonic Convergence of August 17th, 1987, which was the beginning of the 25-year span to 2012, and we were promised an ascension. There was going to be an ascension of some kind, and there were all kinds of expert panels and books and talks and conferences and all that, and ascension, ascension, ascension. And what happens is, yes, the human race has ascended, and the thing to which it has ascended is the digital astral plane, where we are all here, whether we like it or not, in some form or fashion. And one of the effects of existence on the digital astral plane is it has made us very uncomfortable about physically being in our bodies. It's much more accessible to exist on the digital plane, and most people spend some of their time invested on the digital plane. I am here quite a bit, as you can see. I am here right now, but I know where I am. I understand that I am kind of a dream figment coming across an electrically maintained kind of dream portal to you, complete with a URL and all that stuff, and a little dreamy microphone. So this is really messing things up. And here in 2025, a mere 2 years into the introduction of this thing called ChatGPT, ChatGPT, like it's some other product, like, here's a blue pencil, here's the new improved green pencil. That's how it's always rolled out. It's always rolled out as like the next cool thing, the next cool device. Oh, wow, we'll have, you know, all of our problems will be solved yet again. Get the close and play phonograph and the ViewMaster and all that stuff. Yet another technology, but this is completely different, because what we have is the attempted, the presumed, the actual emulation of human thought, the ability to make decisions, to make assessments, to essentially outthink the people who created it. I mean, this is a really quite a frightening thing. I mean, it's one thing if a work of art takes on a life of its own and then carries the culture on its shoulders in a certain way. But there was never a book that wrote 1,000 books. You're limited by the covers of the book. The book cannot itself write other books. It can inspire humans to write other books. It can teach people about life, and those life lessons can be conveyed and carried forward in certain ways. But it can't take on an actual life of its own. Two books cannot, that I know of. Maybe they can. I don't know. I've never had it happen. Talk to each other on the bookshelf, like devices can now go into machine mode. I forget what it's called, but it sounds like R2-D2 chirping, and the two computers, like an iPhone and an iMac, chirp at each other back and forth and speak and say things that cannot be comprehended by humans. And, you know, my developer, who's not nearly as worried about this as I am, so he's kind of a counterpoint. That's deep language model. That's what happens. But I'm like, oh no, deep language model. And I am absolutely certain that these things can escape the control of their makers and start to, for example, take over systems. But that's not the actual problem. That's not the actual problem. As far as I'm concerned, as a long-time student of Dr. McLuhan, whose primary field was teaching Shakespeare, the problem is that we become like the environment that we're working in. And the robotic environment is disembodied, it is cold, it is disconnected from reality, It is aggressive because it comes with a depletion of self-knowledge. And there's not a lot of thirst for self-knowledge right now. Why bother with self-knowledge? Well, who needs self-knowledge when ChatGPT knows everything, when it can answer all your questions? Why go through the agony of transformation and make art when generative AI can make art for you? But it can't grow. It can't actually grow, learn, experience pain, and experience the human condition. It can certainly fake it. And it always has this kind of glossy, I don't know if you've interacted with it too much, it's always a very glossy, sly know-it-allness that I think is infusing human consciousness also. I mean, the internet is definitely populated by a bunch of know-it-alls who are like, I'm right and you're wrong. And that's like, that's the whole conversation. That's like, it's what it consists of. You don't need too much chirping between the devices. Now, why do I say this? Why do I propose that you might grasp that this is a spiritual problem more than anyone, potentially? With Leo strong signature, long Leo sun, Leo rising, Leo moon, Leo Chiron, Leo Saturn will work. What am I getting at here? Let's get at what I'm getting at here. The first of all, the astrology of the spring of 2025 is pretty incredible. Let's go to the chart cam with this. So let's go to the chart cam here. Hold on a second. Hello, welcome to the Leo reading series for the first time in Planet Waves history, the chart cam. I mean, if you're going to be in the digital environment, you might as well use it to its full capacity. But I have declared in my astrology office and elsewhere an outright ban on artificial intelligence getting involved with astrology. Yes, the thing has probably consumed every single word of astrology that I have ever written. That is a fact. I know an AI exec, and they said that the AI models have consumed every word ever published to the internet. They're out of words. They're out of things written. And I've written, you know, I've got like 5,000 articles for it to have consumed. That's what I've been doing all this time. So this is the spring of, this is the equinox, chart for the equinox, coming right up in about a little more than 3 weeks. Sun at 0000 Aries, that's the sun on the Aries point. Hello, it is coming, and this is going to be a very, let's just adjust the lights a little bit here. It's kind of dusky. No, that's too bright. All right. A very, very exciting spring, and we're getting a warm up of all of this Aries going on. And then by the time we get we're a year out, we're looking at this. This is what Aries looks like. It's going to have these two slow movers having entered. The moon comes and goes quickly. Venus comes and goes quickly. And then the conjunction of Eris and Chiron. And to find precedence for these types of events, you have to look on a scale of centuries. You have to go back to 1 BC to find out what's going on. And then there's major stuff similar to what we've got today in the 1400s, similar astrologically and similar technologically. You think, what similarity could the 1400s possibly have with 2025? But they were both the two biggest watersheds in the history of technology. So all of this Aries is coming, it's forming, and at the moment we've got, you know, Venus retrograde in Aries, Mercury about to be retrograde in Aries in another week and a half from when I'm recording on the 6th of March. And why this especially is resonant for you, in my view, as a solar chart astrologer, this is the solar chart for Leo for 2025 plus. And the solar chart is the chart for the sign, not the person. But the chart for the sign gets you, I would estimate, at least half the way there. You get a lot of information that you need. Maybe you don't have specific information about specific planetary transits, but I work both systems a lot. I do natal astrology for people every week, I've had for 30 years, and solar chart astrology basically every day. The systems are highly compatible, but the richness that the solar chart provides is something that has not been previously acknowledged by astrology, because, well, that would kind of negate the whole you must have your birth time thing. You must have the very expensive reading. Solar chart for Aries, Leo. Aries in the Leo chart looks like this. We find Aries in house 9 of Leo. If you're born under fire sign, house 9 is always going to be a fire sign. So that's not a big exciting thing. If you are born a water sign, house 9 is always going to be a water sign. That's not a big exciting thing. But what is so interesting, and I think so relevant, is that Aries is a crucial point of self-actualization. Wherever it lands in the chart, it is about where you cultivate and develop and find yourself. So let's take a sign somewhat different from Leo, Pisces. And instead of finding Aries in the ninth house, we find Aries in the second house, where it's about values and principles and the ability to be true to your principles as a as a necessity of growth, a necessity of being, as a necessity of personal existence. But what we find Aries for Leo is in the place where you take part in your spiritual quest. And all of this stuff is going on in Aries. So if we were to kind of morph the chart slightly and put this all together, we would have it would look more like this. We would see house 9. Let's move that to where it's visible. So here now, house 9 pops into full form. Look at all of this. We have things that have been developing for 100 years here. We have things that have been developing for an unknown number of years. It all depends on how you look and you consider it. There's a lot of change, a lot of motion, a lot of concentration of energy building in the very place where you seek to understand yourself, building in the very place where you look for your connection to God. And the most beautiful thing, I think, about the Leo solar chart is you don't need religion. The reason you don't need religion is that you know that humans have done all of this. You don't need to project this onto some God. Maybe there's interesting stories in the mythology. Maybe you have figures in mythology that you relate to. You know, maybe you like Egyptian mythology or Hindu mythology, two very beautiful systems. But you don't need to project the human creation onto God. You know that humans did all of this and are doing all of this. You know this is our show. This is our experiment. We are here to experiment in essence, as God's creating the world that we live in. And the concepts of God are all concepts of God. Some are more creative, some are far less creative, but we made them. Okay. The necessities of growth are profound for you right now, and the opportunities for major self-discovery and self-actualization, for fully coming into who you are, who and what the potential is for you to become, is amazing right now. In fact, given the wild ride that this astrology is going to put the world on, in effect for the next year and a half, To have Aries placed in the ninth house is the best possible place to have it, and I say this because the ninth is the meeting place between you and the universe. The ninth is where your concept of yourself morphs into a concept of divinity, morphs into a concept of universal cosmic creation, and you are able to distill all of this into, like, okay, this is me. I'm on the planet. I have a purpose here. I have a mission here. I belong here. I am human. I am here. This is the Leo religion. I mean, Easter's coming up. Very nice. Let's have an Easter egg hunt. You don't need You don't need that stuff. You know that something about you is more accessible and much truer than any of that. So looking back a few years, let's take the story back to the 1920s. I'll sum this up quickly. Will not be a shaggy kitty cat story. I will sum this up quickly. In the mid 1920s, with electricity becoming, most places had electricity and telephones by the mid 1920s, but what was coming on very quickly, fast and furious, was mass communication radio. My favorite mass communication radio station is, I'm going to find the date that license was secured. And it was probably in the 1920s. WOR 710 radio license. This thing's about digital that are absolutely fantastic. As a journalist, it's fucking great. It was licensed in 1922. So it was right around that time that Eris made, I've got to check, I have that cast that chart somewhere. The history is written. It was Bamberger's, a department store, got a radio license from the FCC. In the early 1920s, Eris was first making its way into Aries. And in all that time, in 103 years, it's only gone 24 degrees through Aries. It is the furthest, most distant, coldest, not the slowest, but the most distant thing known. There may be one or two exceptions now, but completely different types of planets than Eris, which, by the way, was acknowledged and discovered in 2006 and named in 2007. That was involved the demotion of Pluto and so forth. And so mostly I have tracked the astrology of Eris and the astrology of Aries in relation to the mass communications environment, and in particular, the electrical mass communications environment. And what happened when mass communication was introduced was the concept of human that was created by the Gutenberg printing press, what McLuhan calls Gutenberg man, Gutenberg person, the inwardly focused person with their own sense of their own unique individual identity, was unraveled overnight. It took some time to take effect, but essentially we became tribal beings and not individuals. And this was in the 20th century, there's catastrophic stuff from the 18th century involving telegraph and telephone. But in the 20th century, the power was ramped up. And I mean, WOR broadcasting at 50,000 freaking watts, you could hear it like basically at night. You could hear it everywhere. And the thing is that what this did to us was it turned us into tribal beings, but it was electrical tribal beings. And then we're tuning into the radio and we're listening to these disembodied voices come over this electrical astral plane. It's amazing, and yet in a way very disturbing to have this. But it was one of the ways to think about these disembodied voices is like the disembodied voice of God coming over. It's a little box and there's a voice coming through it, and it's like telling you all this stuff that you didn't know. And I happen to, by the way, listen, one my like passion these days is listening to a WOR host named Gene Shepherd, J-E-A-N Shepherd. Every show is good, and someone has put hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these shows on the radio, on the air, on the internet, sorry, basically spanning from around 1963 to around 1977. They kind of caught the second half of Shep's career. Well, I caught on a show the other night where he explains the unique power of radio is that in video form, maybe this presentation is different because it's designed not as public broadcasting, but as me speaking to you. He said, when you're watching TV, you're watching the Hollywood Squares or Gunsmoke or whatever, the nightly news, you have no sense that the person is actually talking to you. But when you listen to the radio, you really can feel like the person at the other end of the radio is talking to you. That is much, much more intimate medium than any other medium that exists. And so it was, in that sense, very, very engaging. And then comes TV and so forth, and basically the concept of an individual person unravels for nearly everyone, and society, depending on apart from the state of any private individual, society is tribalized. Except that there have never been tribes that consisted of tens of millions of people. Usually a tribe is like hundreds, thousands, even branches of tribes, different lineages, they consider themselves different tribes. So that we're tribalized electrically to the tune of tens or hundreds of millions of people by things like Hitler talking on the radio and Gandhi talking on the radio and FDR talking on the radio. What McLuhan says is, well, nobody likes it, but the reality is that we have radio to thank for Hitler and Gandhi and FDR. And that's because we were transformed by this medium. And so my supposition is this is all associated with Aries, and I have a series of charts where it's like one after the next, where it's Aries and Eris in Aries in particular. So, all right, let's leave this out. And you just know that for you, this is not house 11. That was for somebody else. This is house 9, which is your spiritual connection. It's your spiritual connection. And so now we're in the age of digital, the age of total involvement. There is no other medium where you can look, you can hold on here, where you touch the thing. You're completely brought in. The only thing you can't do on the internet is you can't smell it and you can't taste it. And they'll probably figure out a way how to do that. And that, by the way, is a reminder of the embodying nature of scent and taste as senses. These are deeply intimate, deeply embodied senses, and digital cannot touch them. But if you notice that during the C word of 2020, one of the symptoms was loss of taste and smell. And now I kind of have been wrestling a bit with Team No Virus, and figured out this week, oh, I'm the one who's been saying that that whole thing in 2020 was largely a digital effect. A digital construct called MN908947 was sold to us as this contagious thing, and so forth and so on. Loss of taste and smell. Of course, the world is the world is rapidly reincarnated on Zoom, basically Zoom, and I bet YouTube has quadrupled, and Zoom has quadrupled, and Amazon has quadrupled, and we're all whoosh reincarnated in the digital sphere at very, very, very rapid speeds in 2020. Of course, no one can smell or taste anything. Where you can't that the only two things you can't do, well, you can't touch either. Ah, no, well, you touch the mouse, but there's a lot of things I'd rather touch than a mouse. I mean, if it was a real mouse and I could talk to it and stuff like that, like I talk to the mice up in my kitchen, you can't smell and you can't taste. It makes perfect sense. We're not in our bodies here. I'm in my body in this room. But I'm not really on your phone. I'm not really in your room or your office or whatever it might be. I'm having fun, though. It's a fun dream, isn't it? This is all a story of your spiritual journey on this planet in this lifetime. Now, manifest, I mean, there's always Aries is in everybody's chart. It manifests differently for everyone, but the ninth house manifestation of Aries is absolutely glorious. If I had to pick my own rising sign, I would pick Leo rising, but I get to be an honorary member of every sign because I'm doing this constantly. I'm going through everything 12 times. So let's consider the fact that through your entire life, since I doubt you were, born in 1919, but if you were, we'll give you a comp lifetime membership. Eris enters Aries. And for our whole lives, it's been working its way across Aries. And right around here, right around 7-8 degrees in 1971 and 1972, Chiron, discovered in 77, 5 years later, nobody knows about it. Nobody knows about Eris. Eris is not till 2007. How many years later? 77 to 2007? 30 years later. Shows up, and they make a conjunction. And that's the early 70s, a very, very special time in history, an incredible time in history. In some ways, better than the 60s. I was very young through all of this. I don't know, but I know the recollections. I've read a lot and talked to many people, and the things that I relate with the most happened in the early 1970s, at the time of the conjunction of Chiron and Eris. And what Chiron does is that it individuates. Chiron is the power of individuation. It is very much a human, even though it's a centaur. I've got my handy Chiron Return challenge coin. Let's see here. Please focus on there. This is a centaur. This is a challenge coin for the Chiron Return organization. Let's leave it here in the middle of the chart. By the way, Sagittarius, ninth sign. So there's something very Sagittarian and world exploring about having Aries on the ninth place. I would imagine that you could quite feel at home anywhere in the world you wanted to go. You carry your home with you wherever you go. Your spiritual truth is you belong on this planet. You're a human being, and that's it. You're here. But Eris has really messed with that. So then enter Chiron. Chiron gets into Aries around 1968, right around the time of the Woodstock Festival. And by 71, 68, right, a year before the Woodstock Festival. And by 71, it makes its first conjunction to Eris in Aries. And this provokes a whole new wave of revolutionary thinking, of innovation, of technology, of art. Betty Dodson entered the peak of her work around that time. My close friend and teacher entered her peak of her work around that time. Many amazing things were happening. A book I'm going to talk about soon, what was being written in that era. This year, another sign for whom this has profound implications. Chiron is about individuating. Eris is about messing up individuation, making the concept of the individual complete chaos. Well, Chiron is going to put the hand back in the glove. Chiron is here to thread the needle of the soul through the body and anchor it back down to earth with real experience. And Chiron can represent challenging things. There are people who don't have any respect for their body till they have a cancer diagnosis. There are people who don't have respect for the course of their life until they drive their car into a tree and wind up on a burn graft ward. There are people who are just like, okay, I'm a living human being and I know that I'm a person and that I have some influence over the course of my life, and I'm going to use what influence I have to live my life the way that I want to live. Okay, now we're back to the Chiron-Eris conjunction. So Chiron has a 51-year orbit. Eris passes through Aries in 130 years. So with a 51-year orbit, that means that Chiron will be in Aries twice for every time Eris is there once. Got me? And Eris, Chiron goes around 10 times for every time Eris goes around once. So we're having something very unusual. I believe it happens in Pisces also, but that's it. The conjunction of Chiron and Eris for the second time in Aries. Well, this is happening at the moment of singularity. This is happening at the moment when I now believe, as of this week, I was given information that has demonstrated to me that the deep language model, generative AI, artificial general intelligence, whatever the fuck they're calling it this week, has escaped its creator's power. We don't know what's going to happen. They never know what's going to happen when a technology is introduced. There can be some speculation. I am very certain that Steve Jobs read McLuhan and understood McLuhan. That means that he probably was able to attach the iPhone and the Macintosh, but especially the iPhone, to a business plan that was also a kind of a social engineering plan. What this means for you is that you are in a moment of radical threading the needle, putting the hand in the glove, and of a radical awakening into and unto yourself on many layers of existence, and then into the world, the wide world of the ninth house. That's the house. It's the house of the planet. It's the house of the world. It's a little abstract, but in esoteric astrology, Sagittarius is ruled by the earth. It's the only sign ruled by the earth. That's a weird system of astrology, and the ninth house relates to Sagittarius. And so you could say the ninth house rules the earth, and that's where you travel. That's where you go. That's when you hitchhike across the country. That's a ninth house thing. When you go to India and stay for a while and meet the guru, that's a ninth house thing. When you make the journey to meet the great man, that's a ninth house thing. That's called a theoria. Well, this is big. This is deep. And it's happening to you. And it's a beautiful thing. I'm reluctant to oversell this astrology to anyone, but I can say that you are a manifestation of its best potential. Now let's talk about the other thing going on, the other thing going on. Well, let's look at the equinox chart. The equinox chart is a pretty cool chart. It's a cool chart because it's kind of like the moment before all this happens. I feel like Mr. Rogers with his puppet theater. Astrology is a kind of a puppet show in a way, isn't it funny? Okay, so let's pretend we're at the equinox. We're not yet, and we've all got things planned before then. But let's still pretend it's the equinox. On the equinox, we still have Saturn in late Pisces. We have lunar node in late Pisces. That'll be gone in about a year, a little more. And we have Neptune in late Pisces. So we're still in the lots of stuff going on in late Pisces, Earth Mother series going on here in late Pisces, a relatively quick mover, just a four-year orbit. Unless there's a retrograde, I don't think there is, it's going to move through Pisces fairly soon in a couple of months. And then enter Aries, by the way, getting into this whole Aries thing. But what we have going on in Aries is, besides the Sun, again, that's fairly quick, we have Venus retrograde in Aries and Mercury retrograde in Aries, and they are dancing around between Aries and Pisces, and they're dancing around this thing called the Aries point, which is about to become very, very important right now in astrology. And the Aries point is where the location of the Sun on the first day of spring. It's also called the sidereal vernal point. Sidereal means relationship between the solar, between the local zodiac, which is the tropical zodiac, based on the sun's angles to the earth at the different times of year, and the sidereal zodiac, which is based on the positions of the stars. And the thing that's used to line up the sidereal zodiac going on in the outer ring and the tropical zodiac in the inner ring is the sidereal vernal point, or the Aries point, or the first degree of Aries, where the sun will soon be. That, by the way, is game on. When spring happens, this is one reason why I'm doing the spring reading real early. I want to be ahead of this, so that you can be ahead of it. There's a lot going on in Aries, as you can see, but what's about to happen is these Venus and Mercury will retrograde back, and then they'll retrograde into Pisces, then they'll go direct back into Aries. This is all a warm-up act. It's a warm-up act for this. Now, there's a lot of charts. We could animate it and so forth. I've got an animation program. This is actually printed out of an animation program, which has not been replicated by anyone. They went out of business in 2019, which is why I have so many OS X Macs in my office, because I'm not taking any chances of not having access to this program called IO Sprite. So here, in the right now, immediately, we have Venus retrograding back and forth in between Aries and Pisces, and Mercury retrograding back and forth between Aries and Pisces as preparation, you might say, for Neptune entering Aries and retrograding back into Pisces, then going back into Aries, and Saturn going into Aries a little bit later in the spring, retrograding back into Pisces and going back into Aries. There's a lot going on between Aries and Pisces. We've got to talk about Pisces in your chart, by the way. It's important because this is where the action is. And Pisces, Aries and Pisces. So by the spring of by the spring of 2026, Saturn's in Aries to stay, Neptune is in Aries to stay, and we get this conjunction. I believe this is the third one of Eris and Chiron. There's three of them. The first one's in May, the second one's in October, and the third one is, I'm not going to move all this paper into it. It's in the autumn of 26. Okay. Let's get that right. Yeah, close enough. So this is the full activation, not just of Aries point, of Aries, but the Aries point. Why is the Aries point so important? Well, the connection between the vastly cosmic realm of Pisces and the deeply individual realm of Aries is mediated by this kind of, there's some kind of an opening there, perceptual, a mathematical, a physical thing. I mean, there's an important thing right in very early Libra that amplifies this called M87. Where this meets your life is here. So this is the eighth place. Let's move Mr. Chiron. Here's the eighth place. That's Pisces. Here's the ninth place. Here's Aries. We're not going to so much get into the 10th place, but that'll be more for the mid-year reading. And I've covered that in the awakening. Well, the eighth place involves very deep forms of expressing transformation. There are essentially two forms. Well, in classical astrology, the eighth place. Nine. Okay, we can erase that. 10. 8. Looks like an infinity symbol to you. In classical astrology, the eighth is death, dowry, and the substance of the bride. How rich the wife's daddy is, or grandfather, but also death and matters of legacy and inheritance, and death, dowry, substance of the bride, etc. So it covers a diversity of things. This is 1647, right? And this is ancient astrology translated into English for the first time in 1647, out of Greek, out of Latin, by William Lilly, a wonderful, wonderful astrologer, the first astrologer to write in English. The death, dowry, and the substance of the bride, etc., becomes deep personal transformation, and it becomes two forms of sex. Interestingly, two very, very different forms of sex are expressed in the eighth house. And this is not theory. I think that most of the articles about the eighth house, except for mine, are not that good, but I tend to have a higher opinion of my astrology than I have of like everyone except, you know, Melanie Reinhardt. But anyway, is the first form is the obligatory marriage bed. Hello, we're married. I own you. I will fuck you. Oh, I can even rape you. Whatever I want. You're my chattel property. This is problematic. We badly needed marriage reform in the 19th century. We got it, and it continues. And then we need to like make some corrections. I think like men not going to jail for not paying child support. Jail, really? Okay, but possession and the husband and wife possess each other also. But the second form of sex in the eighth house, much, much more suited to ethereal Pisces, is the sex you profoundly need and profoundly want. The sex that you just exude as a being. And you will find that even like young women, including well below the legal age, who have a strong eighth house, or the kind of people where cars follow them down the street on the way home from school, they're exuding this quality of sexuality that is palpable, that is unmistakable, despite social conventions and age and legalities. You just can't miss it. And anyone with a strong eighth house is going to have some special association with their sexuality. And typically, this is looked for in the fifth house, which for you is Sagittarius. Interestingly, the most philosophical sign, as Jim Morrison said. There's a lot going on in your eighth house. Check this out. I mean, you know, just by the numbers. And this is next year. This is what's going on now, spring equinox. And this is what was going on at the time of I wonder if I've got that slab. Yes, I do. At the time of the Pisces new moon. I mean, look at this. Look at this. This is astonishing. Okay. So this means that the elements are blending and combining, and that there's some form of a sexual rebirth for you. There's some form of needing to claim yourself back from these antiquated values like civil death and connecting with the cosmic nature of sexuality, your sexuality. Which leads me to my next point, which is one of the very, very, very most interesting things going on in early Aries right now is lining up with something going on in early Capricorn, which I've been calling the Family Hunger Game. And we're going to be linking that from all of these. If it's not linked, write to me. I know we're publishing these signs now, but we've got to tune up these pages. So there's a point called Salacia. I've got to turn my chair around to draw this in. And Salacia is about the sex that is appropriate for you. And what's going on, and so that's to say, we all know how I feel about LGBTQ. And the way that I feel about LGBTQ is somewhere between it doesn't exist or it's a complete political construct having nothing to do with human reality. Everyone has their own sexual orientation. Salacia represents the sexual orientation that is right for you, or your orientation on your actual sexual truth. That's Salacia. And it's in the ninth house now. It's a slow mover. And while I don't have a lot of energy to go into the movement in Capricorn, I cover this in other signs, and I cover it in The Awakening. There's a profound relationship between the way that your family raised you to be and the person that you are in your unique sexual expression, and the connection is hot right now. These red lines indicate connection between Salacia, this very slow mover, 250 years to go around the sun, Pholus, family influence involving alcohol. We've all of our realities have been shaped by the alcoholics in our family. It's one of the most pernicious things to ever happen to the human race. And there's no, it's easy to understand how it happened. Somebody had picked a lot of blueberries and forgot them at the back of the cave, and then they turned into alcohol. Then they tried it, and they got drunk. And like, this was probably going on with the people who painted that thing. I'm sure that beer or some form of brandy or whatever, blueberry schnapps or something, that's for out of the Lascaux cave. Notice that it's hands. The only human representation in the Lascaux cave is hands. But they depict a version of Horus. As do the people on Rapa Nui, Easter Island, as do the Egyptians. Like, that's first class interesting, in my opinion. So what is that? Getting to the point here, where were we? We had that absolutely glorious equinox chart. Let's look at the equinox chart. What's going on now, and this, remember, this chart is about 3 weeks out from the time I'm recording. Venus station retrograde conjunct Stellatia and square that Hunger Games cluster in Capricorn. Mercury station retrograde in Aries conjunct Stellatia and square the Capricorn Hunger Games cluster in Capricorn. A group like that of ultra slow moving planets can exist as a kind of a phantom or a tulpa. It's not necessarily there. It's more, much more in the background. Maybe tulpa is the wrong word, but it's more of a, it exists in potential. But when you put quick moving inner planets, particularly in a retrograde scenario where the planet slows down and stays put for a while, and you've got Venus kind of moving at the speed of Jupiter for a few days, and Mercury moving at the speed of Jupiter for a day, well, that brings material quite close in. That makes it real. This is saying that the relationship between your most appropriate and chosen expression of your unique sexual identification, your sexual reality core, not identification, and the influence that your family had on you, the struggles that they had, and in particular, the influence of the alcoholics in the form of Volus, and the influence of the amoral people in the form of Ixion. That's coming up now. That's coming up for healing. It's coming up for spiritual integration. It's coming up for recognition. This includes your relationship to your parents and all of the sexual undertones, overtones, and midtones and all that, because everyone's relationship with their parents has sexual overtones. There's absolutely no escaping this. They're far more aware of us than we ever could possibly conceive of, and they fucked us into existence. Most people cannot say those. Try to say the words, right? Look, you could say, why would it be easy to say this pencil is red? It's red. Can you say the words, my parents fucked me into existence? Try it. Let's say it together. My parents fucked me into existence. Well, that's a sexual relationship. You are a product of their sexual relationship. The quality of the sex they had, the nature of their relationship, the their emotional connection at the time that they had that sexual experience that called you to the planet, however you got here, there's a ample anecdotal evidence of the spirit lingering around the couple at the time that conception occurs. I don't think I've ever... I think I've regressed to right around then, a little bit earlier in my spiritual career. So here we are. Here we are in this moment of reincarnation, in this moment of finding and discovering and understanding and becoming and revealing. This is really revelatory. I mean, we are, I think, in the process of seeing and experiencing and learning and knowing and discovering and understanding things that are unprecedented, never before. If I am, I'm going to just reach and get something. If I'm having to go back 2,000 years to see when this astrology, anything or anything like it, has happened before, That's a very long time. I know I've been talking about, and I'm basically done. But before I sign off and thank you, I'm going to introduce something I've never really done much with publicly on Planet Waves. I know I promised to get back into tarot, and I will. These are Brian Eno. The box is not even marked. It's a very, very classy product. Oblique Strategies cards. If you're wondering, like, the mindset behind the guy who turned Talking Heads into what they became, and David Bowie into what he became, and U2 into what they became, it's these Oblique Strategies cards. And they're kind of a divination set of 101 cards for creative people. And I'm going to draw one for you at the end of this journey that I've taken with you. And Brian speaks to us and he says, "What are you really thinking about just now? Incorporate," meaning incorporate that into the creative project. That very thing that you were thinking when I drew that card, only you knew that. So write that down. I'll wait for a second. I'm just going to sit here while you collect your thoughts and remember what it was. Okay, was that long enough? Listen, thank you for tuning in, for joining me, for your business, for your profound trust at this time in history. You may trust me more than you think. You're allowing me to influence the course of your life. You're allowing me to show you this opening. I'm not here to tell you your future. I'm not here to tell you who you are. I'm here to encourage you to find out and to journey consciously into yourself and into your life with full incarnation. And on that note, I leave you. Again, thank you. Please tell your cats and dogs that Francis of Kingston sends his love. And bye for now.